Full college football playoff semifinal preview here on the College Football Power Hour. Does Texas have an advantage in this game? And are Notre Dame and Penn State the exact same team? Talk to you guys soon. Welcome into the College Football Power Hour. It is officially college football playoff semifinal week. He's Adam Brenneman, that's Jason Fitz, and I am Caroline Fenton. To start things off, Adam, we need an ABVC, an Adam Brenneman vibes check, as Ooh. Penn State
Wait,
heads
did you
into
just come up with that?
I did, off rip.
ABVC. I'm thinking in my head, what is an ABVC, and am I
Adam Brenneman vibe check, obviously.
I like
if you're new to the show, we use that every single week, an ABVC. We've been doing it all season long. I'm kidding. ABVC.
Brenneman, you need that on shirts? Like, you need, like,
I know.
You need a
I
whole,
made,
like,
I may trademark that. You're going to see me tweeting it.
I mean, ABVC. Oh, God, yeah. Like, every week that you're in a different college football environment, you'll be like, all right, I'll get to the ABVC on this. Oh, God.
Just rolls off
the
tongue.
Caroline Fenton with it. Might as well.
Thank you.
It was a great show. Congratulations. I'll see you guys next week. We're not going to top what just happened.
Is this our first show of 2025? Well, is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, is it? Okay, well, then we're off to a hot start in 2025.
Hold on. We did a show on New Year's Eve as the ball was dropping.
That's okay,
we did. That. And then we did a show the next day. So this is like show like number three or maybe even number four of 2025. But again, no time is too late to get off to a hot start.
So the ABVC for the Penn State world would be this. A lot of relief after the first 2 weeks of the playoff. In those must-win games where you're big favorites, and we all know the talk around James Franklin and not playing well in the big games, and Penn State played well. Probably the two most important games in recent Penn State history, they played really well. But I'll say this. I think it is kind of ironic and almost fitting that of all the adversity, all the ups and downs of those big game talks for James Franklin and in his journey at Penn State, that now in the first year of the 12-team playoff, Penn State is a game away from playing for a national title. And the way it plays out here, I mean, there's a real chance that it could be Penn State, Ohio State in the national championship game. And James Franklin has a chance to become the first African-American head coach in the history of college football to win a national title against Ohio State, who he's been so publicly trashed for not beating enough times as a head coach. So I think it's a pretty cool – a lot has to happen still. I mean, well, not that much. A win against Notre Dame, and Ohio State has to beat Texas, which they're big favorites to do. But I think it's kind of interesting that everything is right where Coach Franklin wanted it to be. And Penn State's a game away from playing for a national title, despite losing to Ohio State this season again.
Is that a nightmare scenario, though, to get Ohio State in the Natty? Because, like, if he loses the Natty to Ohio State, like, you never want to think about
it's
losing,
tough.
But if he loses the Natty to Ohio State, like, I've been the one sitting here screaming at Penn State fans to just shut up about James Franklin not winning big games because he won two playoff games. Like, I just – playoff games are big games. You don't get fired when you win playoff games. I want to apply the same logic of every sport to college football. So, like, I'm the one sitting here planting the flag of, like, can we just get off James Franklin's back for the love of God? And now that you've said that, I'm like, oh, that changes a little bit if he loses the Natty to Ohio State. Like, I understand why fans will lose their mind in that one.
And I also think that's a dream scenario for Tony Petitti. After all of so many years of Big Ten commissioner Tony Petitti, after all of the years of SEC dominance in so many sports, and it was Alabama, and if it wasn't Alabama, it was Georgia, and if it wasn't Georgia, it was LSU in 2019. If it wasn't LSU in 2019, it was Auburn when Cam Newton was there. It was this long reign of SEC dominance, and if we get a Penn State Ohio State national championship, that is just Tony Petitti's way of saying, I told you so. I knew the value of this conference, which is, you know, especially a little cherry on top after the massive, massive TV deals that the Big Ten signed. So obviously a dream scenario for Tony Petitti, obviously a dream scenario for the Big Ten, and of course, obviously a dream scenario for both Ohio State and for Penn State. But they got to get past Notre Dame first, which, as we saw, against Georgia is no easy feat, Fitz.
Caroline, though, I just want to double down on one of my least favorite things in college football. And that is conference screaming about my conference is great when your team is not involved in the championship. I don't understand this. Like, I do not. The whole my conference is better than your conference is essentially the college football equivalent of my dad can beat up your dad. There's no real way to prove most of it. There's not an easy way. And then what you have are like Wisconsin fans that'll be like, yeah, Big Ten, Big Ten. You don't get to say anything. Your team wasn't there. Like Vandy fans that are sitting there chanting SEC when Alabama wins a national championship. You don't get to do that. Like this the concept that I'm going to root. I don't understand this weird thing in college football where I root against the team all the time until the national championship game where I root for them because I want my conference to like the NFL equivalent. I'm a Raiders fan. I am never going to root for the Kansas City Chiefs to win a Super Bowl. I hate the Chiefs. I don't want to see the Chiefs get anything nice. Yeah. And then you have like Purdue fans that are going to sit around all both of them and scream like, oh my God, how great is the Big Ten when Penn State or Ohio State wins a national championship? I don't understand it. I'm just railing against it.
Do Big Ten fans feel that way? Because I know that's a large sentiment with the SEC, that for a long time, a lot of other conferences just didn't understand that, you know, it was SEC, SEC. And even if Alabama won a national championship, then you know, LSU and Auburn fans would rejoice because at least someone in the SEC is winning a championship. I don't know if I can fully get on board with that. If you are a diehard fan of your team losing to the eventual national championship doesn't necessarily justify losing to that team. But I know that that's a sentiment in the SEC. I live in an SEC world, but is that a Big Ten feeling?
I mean, I root for Big Ten teams when Penn State's not playing. I definitely root in bowl season and playoff time for Big Ten teams to win.
Fraud.
But the reason is in college football, there's a lack of parity from the conference standpoint, very different than the NFL. No one's saying like, oh, you play. I know there's better divisions than others, but for the most part, every division has good teams in the NFL, where college football is very different. And also in college football, you really only play your conference. You play 9 or 8 conference games, a few non-conference games. A lot of times they're FCS or group of five teams. So you only play those teams. Where in the NFL, you play teams all over different each conference and division. So I think that's the reason that teams and fans feel more of a pressure or an urge to root for the conference they're in, because they're so closely tied to that conference. Like, whether your conference is respected or not could mean whether you make the playoff in the future, and whether you go 7-6 or 7-5 in one conference is very different than going 7-5 in another. So I think that's really the reason. I remember growing up, like, and my dad saying to me when I was like a kid, like, you know, Purdue, or probably not Purdue at that time, I don't know if they were in the Big Ten, but like Ohio State's playing and we're like, we root for Ohio State because they're in the Big Ten. That was kind of like my mindset growing up all the time, which is, it's an interesting dynamic to think about. I'm not sure if the SEC is like that.
It's almost like a love-hate relationship. Like, I hate you and I want to you on any given Saturday, but as
like
long
toxic.
As we're not playing, it's incredibly toxic. It's like we're rooting for the greater good, but also on an individual level, I hate you.
Can you imagine how Michigan fans would feel sitting and watching a Penn State, Ohio State? Like, I know Michigan's got a championship right now. They're still that Michigan is still our defending national champion. Nothing has changed that. But if they sit there and watch an Ohio State, Penn State championship game, I can only feel like, you know, shout out to my buddy Steve. Every time there's he's a Michigan diehard. Every time there's another Big Ten moment with Ohio State, you can just feel his blood boil. I cannot imagine. Yeah. Be like, hey, buddy, want to come over for the national championship? No, you just avoid that game completely. Like, I want nothing to do with it.
That game didn't happen. We only acknowledge the Montana State, North Dakota State national championship that happened on Monday night. That's the only one that matters.
Walk-off punt. It was fun.
Special teams win championships, okay? That is the message of the postseason. But let's get into it. Penn State, Notre Dame, Orange Bowl, Thursday night. The more and more I look at both of these teams and, you know, break things down, try and come up with my thoughts about this game, the more and more I've asked myself, is this the same team? Like, are these two the exact same team? Because both Penn State and Notre Dame, they want to run the football, and both of them have kind of a two-headed monster that they can do it with. Obviously, Penn State with Catron Allen and Nick Singleton, and Notre Dame with Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price. Both have won so many games with elite defenses. Obviously, Notre Dame, it's a little bit more difficult now that they're without their leading sacker, Riley Mills, but it didn't seem to be much of an issue against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. I think both receiving cores are pretty comparable. I probably give the edge with just pure wide receivers to Notre Dame with Jordan Faison, Bo Collins, and Jaden Greathouse. But Penn State probably has just the pure overall pass catcher in Tyler Warren. Both have quarterbacks that can do really great things, but also you have a little bit of trust issues with. So overall, Adam, I keep asking myself, like, I think Notre Dame and Penn State are the exact same team. It just comes down to which does what they do best better.
This is really a matchup of two teams who play the same style in offense, the same style in defense. Their programs are built similar ways. Their head coaches have similar coaching styles. They take risk at a similar amount. I think the biggest difference is the two quarterbacks. So I think Drew Aller plays a different style of play than Riley Leonard. Riley Leonard should probably run the ball 15 times in this game, 20 times in this game if it gets really close. So where Drew Aller is more of that pocket passer, stands in the pocket, delivers the ball down the field. But I think this matchup creates everything to be an instant classic. I mean, I think this is a very, very tight game. I mean, I think Vegas has it like a point or a half point spread right now. And I think that's right. The one area, as I was digging into some of the stats and looking at some of the data on the game, you know, I think everyone's been on the same page that Penn State has gotten much better on offense since the Ohio State game. And they're playing at a really high level since that loss to Ohio State, probably 6 weeks ago. The biggest change Penn State had since that game is they changed and upped their usage of 12 personnel, two tight ends, from about 35% before Ohio State to now 60% of plays, they are running two tight end, 12 personnel sets. That's a huge difference late in the season. You know, I think that high percentage of 12 personnel is very indicative of what the priorities are for Penn State's coaching staff since the Ohio State game. Penn State is much closer to a championship team with an extra tight end in the game instead of a receiver because the backs are so dominant. Drew Aller can be used somewhat in the run game at that point. And then Penn State gains the extra hat in the run game, and it's worth the sacrifice in the pass game vertically down the field. But you also have other tight ends, and I think a couple key players in this game are Luke Reynolds, Khalil Dinkins, two of the backup tight ends, but they're really not backups because they play so much, that play alongside Tyler Warren, that will see a ton of time in this game. So that will be a major chess match. How does Notre Dame fit some of those 12 personnel groupings that Penn State has? And overall, how does Notre Dame call their sets against that heavier personnel? Notre Dame, on the other hand, I saw this stat. Notre Dame was the bottom five in FBS football in seeing 12 personnel against them on offense. So no one went up against Notre Dame running 12 personnel because no one thought that getting in heavy sets and running the football was actually feasible against Notre Dame's defense. But Penn State's going to. And Penn State's the first team who can do it. And I have a feeling it's going to prove wonders in this game and be the reason Penn State wins.
To that end, you know, I was having a conversation this morning with Mike Golic Jr., longtime buddy and obviously Notre Dame alum. And I asked him, I said, what scares you the most in this game? And he said, man, if Penn State commits to truly running the football, when you think about where the only real crack in the armor for Notre Dame defensively right now is the depth on the defensive line, right? So over the course of the game, and this is why I love what you just said, Adam, about how evenly matched these two teams are. This game to me is like sometimes styles make fights, and we know that. This is not a style make fights game. This is an execution game. Because these two teams are so common and similar in the way that they do things, it's really going to be who can execute what the most. So in my mind, if we see the version of Penn State that we saw, for example, in the Big Ten championship game against Oregon, that was just coming out of every set, they were saying, hey, how do we run the football just right at this line? I think that that's probably the path here for Notre Dame that Notre Dame should be concerned about, I should say. Because in my mind, if Penn State can come out and just absolutely hammer this line early in the game, it won't matter. Early in the game, we're going to see a lot of why are they running the football? It's not working. It will break its way through in the third quarter against a defensive line that the depth is going to be tested on. So I think patience, keeping this game, you know, like a knockout fight, keeping it close and letting it be ugly for three quarters actually really plays to the advantage of Penn State in this football game moving forward. And then the other part of this, Caroline, that I think we have to really factor in is that Riley Leonard has been very good, but you can make Notre Dame's offense one-dimensional. We talked about last week, like the teams that lose are the teams that become one-dimensional. Notre Dame was one-dimensional throwing the football. Drew Aller throws the football a lot better than Riley Leonard could ever imagine. So there are going to be opportunities out of play action that Drew Aller can take advantage of that I'm not sure Notre Dame's offense has the same in their depth in their offense. That's what starts to make me lean. My pick before all of this was Notre Dame, but this feels like a flip of the coin. And right now, I'm not sure that we shouldn't trust Drew Aller more than we trust Riley Leonard in this football game to make two or three plays.
Important to point out, too, though, that even if Notre Dame is one-dimensional, they can still beat the SEC champion Georgia Bulldogs in the college football playoff. Because yep. Riley Leonard threw for 90 yards against Georgia, and it didn't matter. It was one of his best rushing days on the season. And, you know, Notre Dame as a whole was running the football very well, even with kind of a not 100% Jeremiah Love. And they were still able to win the football game. And I think that's going to be a big key here against Penn State, and that is forcing turnovers. That Notre Dame is one of the best teams in the country at forcing turnovers. That was a huge momentum shift against Georgia when they knocked the ball out at what, like the Georgia 13? And that was the only offensive scoring drive for Notre Dame on the entire day in the Sugar Bowl was the turnover right before half. It was one play, 13 yards, 7 points. And before you know it, you blink an eye and Notre Dame has kind of put the game on ice. They did it against Indiana. You know, the Curtis Rourke early interception that was followed up by the 98-yard Jeremiah Love touchdown run. That, you know, when Notre Dame forces turnovers, you're not asking Riley Leonard to do too much with his arm. That's the sweet spot for Notre Dame. Obviously, incredibly difficult to predict turnovers, but that's a massive key, I think, for Notre Dame is forcing turnovers against a Penn State team that doesn't cough up the football very much.
Two of the key guys in this game for Notre Dame are Xavier Watts and Leonard Moore. They're two of the guys in their secondary. That secondary is the X factor in this one. Moore is the freshman corner. Watts, the senior safety. To beat Penn State, like you said, Caroline, Notre Dame will have to force at least one turnover. I don't see a world where Notre Dame can win this game without at least one takeaway. And that's likely going to come from the secondary. You got Watts, who has multiple interceptions this season and a fumble recovery in the last couple games. You know, realistically, Penn State matches up really well in the box, and the secondary is going to have to be the tacklers. Can this Notre Dame secondary continue their stretch of great tackling in their previous few games? That's a very underrated question in this game. You got Schuler, their safety, who's going to be the guy matched up against Tyler Warren, and that will then allow Xavier Watts to kind of roam around and play center field, get into the box, and make some tackles. You got Jordan Clark, their transfer nickel from Arizona State. He's a scrappy nickel that's going to have to play in the box and make tackles in open space against Katron Allen and Nick Singleton. There's going to be multiple rushes in this game where Katron Allen and Nick Singleton get to the second level, and then it's going to force the Irish secondary to make the tackle to prevent a 6-yard run from turning into a 16-yard run, a 4-yard run getting into a 60-yard run. So, you know, Watts and Moore have double-digit tackles in the last couple of games. Those are going to be two big players for Notre Dame. They're going to have to step up in the secondary fits.
And they have, by the way, I think you're talking about a strength for the secondary as opposed to, like, you hear secondary tackling. That's not always something that makes people comfortable. Yeah. Notre Dame defense has done that well. But I also think, conversely, the other thing that this Notre Dame defense does, back end of the defense particularly, closes well. So the closing speed is they reduce windows. So Drew Aller is going to have to do a really smart job of throwing guys open, right? Like Drew Aller is going to have to anticipate throws. If he's late on throws, you will pay for him. We saw that in the Georgia game. Like so often we hear the difference between college football quarterbacks and NFL quarterbacks. There's a difference between throwing to a guy that's open and throwing a guy open. That's much different. Anticipation on throws for Drew Aller is going to have to be lights out. But conversely, I went back and started watching some of the Penn State just like plays throughout the course of the year. Drew Aller's done a much better job of that than I give him credit for here. So I think this also, like, what creative wrinkle are we going to see from a Penn State offense that we expect creative wrinkles from? That's part of why they made a change in offensive coordinator. We talk about it all the time. Like, there is some level of creativity that comes here too. So I think that there's opportunities, you know, for Penn State to be able to open some of that up against the secondary that's going to have to play close to the line of scrimmage to just continually try and tackle guys.
Yeah.
And it's that balance of creativity, not being predictable, maybe what we saw from Penn State against Ohio State, but also not getting cute with it. We saw a little getting cute with it against Boise State. And it's just bow up and run the football. Like, you do not have to, you know, throw in any of these, like, gadget plays or get overly cute with it. It's being consistent with what you do best, but also not being predictable. So overall, I think one of the biggest keys for Notre Dame is forcing turnovers and obviously special teams. I think that Notre Dame is one of the most balanced teams in the country of its 33% offense, 33% defense, and 33% special teams. We don't see that from a lot of modern college football teams. You know, obviously we saw it with the funky fourth and one, bringing the punt team out and substituting all 11, forcing Georgia offsides to kind of put the game on ice in the Sugar Bowl. You know, we saw it with the kick return for a touchdown in the second half against Georgia. But for Penn State, I think one of the biggest keys is taking Riley Leonard's legs away from him, because Riley Leonard has evolved very much so as a passer. But against this Penn State defense, I don't think Riley Leonard is going to be able to win Notre Dame a football game against this Penn State defense with just his arm alone. But such a massive part of that is Abdul Carter. He's a little bit banged up. Adam, any news of what you've heard from Abdul Carter? I've seen he's been posting some Star Wars stuff on Instagram. I don't know what that means.
From everything I've been told and heard, Abdul Carter is good to go in this game. So I think, for that, now I could be wrong, but that's what it seems like. That's what I've heard. He's a huge factor in this game. Huge. And the Penn State defense against Boise looks a little bit different when Abdul Carter is not in there. So I think that'll be a huge factor.
Let's pick it.
I think common sense tells you that Ohio State, Texas is a shootout and Penn State, Notre Dame is a slugfest. I'm going to go the opposite. I think an important thing to consider is Penn State and Texas are one of the first ever teams. They are the first ever teams in college football history where their opponent has 15 games of film on you coming into the game. 15 games. Next week will be, this next game is weeks is 16. If either of them win. So I think that more film equals more looks favors the offense. The defense is, there's only so much the defense can do creativity wise, right? Your defense kind of is what it is. More looks, more film, offense has the advantage in a lot of this area. So I'm going to go higher scoring game here than what people are expecting. I think Penn State wins 31-28. I think there'll be multiple explosive plays in the play action, naked boots, as you mentioned, Fitz, Drew Aller on the play action. But don't get it twisted. I think the run game is going to have to travel down to Miami as well. But we're going to see an explosive, high-scoring game between these two teams.
Man, if we get into the 30s, that absolutely favors Penn State, right? Like, totally. If this game gets into that, that would surprise me. And my pocketbook wouldn't appreciate it because some of us on this show may have hammered the under on this. So
it's a low under.
I think this is an ugly game in every beautiful way. Like, this to me feels like one of those games that it's punt, 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 punt. But what you're watching is just defenses flying and defenses hitting the snot out of people over the course of the game. I've gone back and forth. This is the tough game to pick. And, you know, my gut tells me that we're going to get a couple of more plays out of Drew Aller. But I don't know, man. This Notre Dame defense, I'm intimidated by this Notre Dame defense at this point. Notre Dame's defense finds a way to make a play, makes it happen. They win a 20-17. Yeah, maybe even, yeah, we'll go 20-17. Go 20-17 right now. That's my gut. Notre Dame wins. Adam's angry, and I want to console him with a hug. I go all the way up to Adam, and we find him in Miami, and we give him a hug.
Yeah.
Over under this game is 44.5, and we would all collectively give Adam a hug because that's a tough
you
one
can,
as well.
You can find me in South Beach on Thursday
Which
night.
It's better to cry in Miami than to cry anywhere else. That's fair to say. True. It's better to cry with a tan.
I'll be crying at Liv.
Yeah, you'll be crying with a daiquiri in your hand. You know, tiniest violin for you. I'm with you, Fitz. I think that this is going to be like a slugfest, rock fight kind of game. I think the under hits, over under is 44.5. I'm going to take Penn State to win it 24-21. And the reason why I give, well, I guess that the under wouldn't be hitting. And I'll take Penn State to win 24-20. The under just barely hits.
I like that.
The reason why I'm picking Penn State to win is because I think both of these teams are so similar. And I think both of these teams are so evenly matched. But if I just have to look, you know, pound for pound, player for player, Penn State has the advantage both offensively and defensively. When Penn State's offense is on the field, Tyler Warren is the best player on the field. I think Abdul Carter is the best player on the field, period. Like, Abdul Carter is going to be the highest drafted player that we're going to see on the field. I think Abdul Carter is the best player that we're going to see on the field. So I don't, especially with Riley Mills out for Notre Dame. So I think that Penn State just has the player and the talent advantage very, very slightly. So I think that that's going to show up in a game that is going to be just a total pure rock fight, Adam.
So we got 2-for-1 for Penn State. Is that right?
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I like My final thoughts on this is, this is an absolute cut it loose game for Franklin and Marcus Freeman. There should be fireworks out there. Very minimal pressure on both sides. Both programs very happy to make the semifinals. This should make for one hell of a Thursday night game. I think it's going to be an instant classic that's going to be talked about for a long time in college football.
You think there's very little pressure on both sides?
Yeah, I mean, if either team loses this, no one's calling for anyone's head. I mean, I think there's not a ton of pressure to win this game for either of these head coaches.
Like, yeah, it's very different than Ryan Day at
Ohio State.
Totally. Yeah.
If this game were 55-10, then maybe there'd be some conversation afterwards. But if we get the game we're all predicting, then both of these fan bases are going to have to look around and be like, man, what a game, what a classic. Can't believe we lost. That sucks. We'll get them next year.
No doubt.
I don't think that's going to be the response. I feel like the Penn State response will be, well, you can beat SMU and Boise State, but you can't beat Notre Dame. And then the Notre Dame perspective will be, okay, well, we're back in the same place. You know, we can win a playoff game, but we can't win the national championship, or we just can't get past that hump. So obviously there's going to be pressure no matter, you know, who it is, whoever the head coach is. You're in the college football playoff. It is win or go home. It's last game of the year. Can't hold anything back now. So obviously, there's an insurmountable amount of pressure, but when you're comparing it to Ryan Day, it doesn't seem so bad because it's going to be a pressure-packed day for Ryan Day. Every day is a pressure-packed day for Ryan Day. But let's get into that game coming up next. Ohio State, Texas in the Cotton Bowl after a quick break. Texas, Ohio State. Someone help me find an advantage for Texas here, because I keep looking. I keep trying to find one. I keep trying to, you know, give Texas a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here. But in every game that Texas has played so far this season, I feel like I can say, okay, Texas's advantage is the defense, because Texas's defense is one of the best defenses in the country. Even the two times that they played Georgia, I said, I still think Texas has the advantage defensively. Texas is only giving up 280 yards a game, and they're only giving up 14.5 points throughout the entirety of the season. Ohio State's defense is better. They're giving up fewer points a game. They're giving up fewer yards per game. And Ohio State's defense, has played better throughout the college football playoff. You can nitpick both of these quarterbacks, but overall, you know, Quinn Ewers has not been incredibly impressive in the college football playoff. He's done some great things. Obviously, the 4th-and-13 against Arizona State, he stepped up in a big way. But Will Howard has been unstoppable in the playoffs. Fitz, the only advantage that I see here for Texas is that the game is being played in Texas. Am I wrong?
Which is a heck of an advantage. But no, you're right. Here's the funny thing about that Texas defense, because I feel like every week I come out and I'm like, oh, Texas defense. All right, two playoff games. I thought they gave up too many points to Clemson, and they let Arizona State back in the game. They got run on by Arizona State. And like, as good as Cam has been, and as good as that Arizona State, as well as they played throughout the course of that, let's not get it twisted. Ohio State's a much more formidable offense to be taken on, Adam. So, I mean, in my mind, even the Texas defense has not looked quite like we expect the Texas defense to look for their first two wins. Take nothing away from the fact that they are where they are. But, man, in order to find a path to win here, I've got to give the benefit of the doubt to Texas that their defense is going to play lights out, that Quinn Ewers isn't going to throw the stupid pick per game that he seems to throw every single time, that Quinn Ewers is going to play absolutely clean. They're going to run the ball better than they have against quality opponents. And all at the same time, I'm going to have to take away any benefit of the doubt that Ohio State is actually who Ohio State has looked like for the last two games. I can't find a path. I cannot believe I'm saying this right now, but I can't find a path here where I feel comfortable picking a Texas win.
Yeah, I agree with you, Fitz. And I think that the biggest matchup in this game, or the biggest factor for Texas, is that Texas is going to have to do everything they possibly can to not allow Jeremiah Smith to march up and down the field on them and dominate as one of the best receivers in college football. I think Texas actually will have some success in slowing down Jeremiah Smith. Texas's secondary is elite. You know, one of the highest graded in the country, you know, according to some of the data services. They can hang around with Ohio State for sure. But the good news for Ohio State is that they have two other legitimate wide receivers to go up along with their generational wide receiver one. I mean, you got Emeka Egbuka, you got Carnell Tate. You know, Egbuka has quietly become one of the top receivers in Ohio State history. You know, that's a long list of elite receivers that play for Ohio State. Egbuka has, you know, 5-6 catches in each of the last two playoff games for Ohio State. The storyline all season has been Jeremiah Smith, and rightfully so, but it's time for Emeka Egbuka or Carnell Tate to remind the rest of the nation that they would be the best player on 90% of teams in America. And Carnell Tate has just a couple catches in each of those games, but those guys are good enough. And with Texas putting all that pressure to slow down Jeremiah Smith and not allowing him to beat them, I think that we're going to see Carnell Tate or Emeka Egbuka have a huge game and end up really being the deciding factor in what I think will be a pretty close game between Ohio State and Texas.
And the other path that I see for Texas is, let's not forget that Ohio State has had, what, 20-something different offensive line combinations, that they're without their starting left tackle, that they're without their starting center, Seth McLaughlin. That has not reared its ugly head so far in the college football playoff. In fact, I think Ohio State's offensive line has maybe even played better in the college football playoff, not at full strength than they were at full strength in the regular season. And that's going up against Tennessee's defense that I think is the deepest defensive line in all of college football. That was going up against Oregon's defensive front that has NFL players scattered all around it. So it's not like this is an offensive line that hasn't been tested. I guess the only thing is, well, does something have to give for Ohio State's offensive line? Does something have to give for Will Howard, who has been playing absolutely lights out best football of the season in these last two college football playoff games? I've seen nothing over these last two games against two of the best teams in the country that would lead me to believe that that would be the case. That would lead me to believe that Ohio State's offensive line and Will Howard as a whole, you know, will take a step back. But that's really the only path that I kind of see here for Texas. And it's obviously Texas forcing turnovers, running the ball effectively. That's an incredibly important key component in Texas winning football games. Maybe unexpected playmakers stepping up for Texas. You know, Matthew Golden has gotten a majority of the targets in the playoffs. Maybe it's Silas Bolden or Ryan Wingo, the true freshman, that step up in this game. But those are all what ifs. You know, those are all maybe this might happen. The proven commodity here is Ohio State.
Yeah, and I think that even the bigger offensive line story here is Texas's offensive line. They looked banged up against Arizona State, and this could be a nightmare for Texas. I mean, I'm worried that Quinn Ewers is going to be fighting for his life back there, and it's one of those games where you look up at the end and Ohio State had 7 or 8 sacks. I'm expecting a first quarter like sky cam shot that has Quinn Ewers adjusting his face mask because JTT or Cody Simon just came in unblocked after Texas was sliding their protection to block Jack Sawyer. I mean, like, I kind of get you're gonna see that in the game in the first quarter and be like, that was a sky cam shot we were talking about. I mean, this could be a nightmare for Texas's O-line against Ohio State's pass rush.
Well, and if we're being honest, I was surprised that Arch didn't get a look at some point in the Arizona State game just because Quinn was getting beat up so bad. I wondered, they're going to go to a more mobile quarterback just to help him find a way to extend some of these plays and drives in the second half. To your point, Adam, that feels like such a huge part of this game is that you're stuck. If you can't stop that defensive line from getting after Quinn, you're gonna force everything for him to speed up. And once everything for him speeds up, now all of the benefit of the doubt arguments of like, can they establish these other things are going to become more difficult, which is why, go back to insert here, Texas has got to run the football and be able to rely on play action. I don't know how they're going to run the football against this Ohio State defensive line. So like, it just, the narrative on Ohio State, rightfully so, has changed so much from the Michigan game because they look like a different team. The play calling, the execution, all of it just looks like a different team. So it's like you almost have to crumple up whatever we saw in the Michigan result and just throw that away and say, I don't really care about that. That's an outlier to what we've seen for two straight weeks. And I want to go back to that Caroline's point on that Tennessee defense. That Tennessee defensive line was supposed to be able to absolutely wreck Ohio State. They didn't get wrecked, right? And then that Tennessee offense was supposed to be able to run the football. They couldn't do a damn thing against that Ohio State defensive line. Like, it's the fronts. It's the front seven on both sides that look reimagined in the playoffs. And that's, man, when you're that hot on those sides of the ball for that team, I don't know how you stop it. I don't know how you slow it down. Like, this is the same problem we've said for the last couple of opponents. If you dig yourself into a big hole, how do you get out of it? If Texas digs themselves into a 21-0 hole, which is what we've seen, they're not going to be able to get their way out of it. They got to find a way to somehow survive the first 8 minutes of this football game, which so far in the playoffs has been impossible for everybody against Ohio State.
And Trey Wisner and Jaden Blue will be the best running backs that Ohio State has faced in the college football playoffs.
Sure.
Dylan Sampson was banged up when Ohio State played Tennessee in the first round. And obviously, Jordan James was out for Oregon when they played this past week. So they're running into not just one, but two of the best running backs they've seen all college football playoffs long. But I don't think that that's going to make an overwhelming difference, because I didn't think that a healthy Dylan Sampson was the difference for Tennessee. It made a difference. It wasn't the difference. I didn't think Jordan James being out was the difference for Oregon. It would have made a difference, but it wouldn't have been the difference in us talking about an Oregon-Texas matchup today versus an Ohio State-Texas matchup. So let's pick this game. I believe this game opened up as 5.5 points in favor of Ohio State. Ohio State, 5.5 point favorite. The last I've checked is now Ohio State is a 6.5 point favorite. So all the money coming in on Ohio State. Fitz, who take it in this one?
Ohio State, big. I think, you know, the problem with a playoff game is it can get out of hand so quickly. And that's what we've seen against Ohio State. That's stuck in my head. Couple of quick touchdowns to those receivers, and all of a sudden, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't right now when Ohio State's playing as hard as they are. If you allocate what you need to slow down their running backs, then you won't have the help that you need to slow down their weapons on the outside. I don't know how you stop that with the Texas defense that over the last couple of games, like I said, hasn't been as good as their reputation or their regular season. So this feels to me like a game that gets a little bit out, and they get enough of a jump that they can take care of business. I'll take Ohio State 38-21.
Okay. I like it. I like it. I think it's a little bit too high scoring. Everything about this game is going to have the public hammering the over. I mean, Texas gave up 31 to Arizona State. both teams scoring 40 points a game, but the over-under is at 53 right now. Or what'd you say it was, Carolina?
Let's see, over-under is 53.5.
53.5. I mean, that seems a little low. I mean, that just screams under to me. Every one of their mothers is going to be taking the over in this one. So I'm going to go 24-20 Ohio State in what I think is going to be a tight ball game that's controlled by Ohio State's defensive line and Texas's secondary. People are going to call me crazy for this. Fitz obviously thinks I'm crazy, but we all just watched a 13-10 matchup in Columbus 6 weeks ago. And I do think Ohio State's the best team in the playoff. I think Ohio State wins the national championship, but this game is going to be a slugfest. And I think Texas will have some success on defense. They now have a couple games of film against this reinvented Ohio State offense, and that simplified things after Michigan. So I think Texas will find some success. It won't be enough. Ohio State wins 24-20. Game goes under.
I agree with you slightly in that I think that the under is going to hit, because I think there's been way too much talk about how many points are going to be scored in this game. And if there's anything we learned about college football this season, whatever everyone thinks is going to happen is more than likely not going to happen. I think, though, that Ohio State is going to win. I think Ohio State is going to win big. So I'll take Ohio State to win 28-10. I don't think that this is going to be like a 40-plus point game for Ohio State, because Texas's defense is just too good. But Ohio State's defense is also very good. I also just don't trust Texas enough to not sleepwalk, because we saw Texas's offense sleepwalk for two quarters against Arizona State, and it came back to bite them in the ass. They took it to two overtimes. We saw Texas's defense take a little bit of a nap in the third quarter against Clemson, and then it got just a little bit too close for comfort. Obviously, it's a lot easier to, quote-unquote, take those naps against opponents that feel inferior, or at least are inferior on paper. You can't take a nap against Ohio State that's looking like far and beyond the best team in the country. I just think Texas has to play a perfect game to beat Ohio State, and I don't think that Texas will play a perfect game. So I think Ohio State wins. Ohio State wins big. I think we have a Penn State-Ohio State national championship, and all the Big Ten fans shall rejoice. All right, we picked those games. Let's take some other prop bets. Quick break here. We will crash out or cash out on the other side. All right, crash out or cash out. We will start with the Notre Dame-Penn State game in Miami. Over, under, Riley Leonard, 157 and a half passing yards. He's averaging 170 on the season, Adam. He only had 90 against Georgia. So is this going to be a bigger day for Riley Leonard with his arm?
No, I would go under on the 157 and a half passing yards for Riley Leonard. I think it comes down to Notre Dame not having enough production catching the football. Notre Dame is a tight end offense, and their best tight end has four catches in the last two games. They're limited at the skill position spot, limited at receiver. Faison's a good player, but I don't think he's good enough here. I think Penn State's going to do what they did against SMU and Boise, play one high man-to-man, stop the run, put even more pressure on Riley Leonard, and I think he'll have more around 100 yards passing in this one, not necessarily very close to 157.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I've got the under on Riley Leonard passing. I've actually got the over on Riley Leonard rushing. I think he's just going to get a ton of attempts. They're just going to try and find, to Adam's point, they're a tough team to run on, but they're going to find ways to try and break that open by using Riley's legs, not his arm. And the other part of it is, let's be honest, when Riley rolls out and when he's in a running situation, he looks to run. He's not a guy that's going to get close to the line and try and figure out a way to flick it out there and make a big play happen. He makes plays happen with his legs. So I think your earlier estimate of 13 to 15 carries feels spot on for where Riley's going to end up in this thing. Under on the passing yards, for 157 and a half felt beefy to me.
It feels beefy for Riley Leonard. Right. And which I think says everything about Riley Leonard, as in how Notre Dame has had success with Riley Leonard, is 157 passing yards. Like, whoa, 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 slow down here. I'm going to take the over, though, and I'll take the over ever so slightly. I could see this being like a 160, 165 kind of passing day for Riley Leonard. And that's for two reasons. One, I think that Notre Dame is going to be playing from behind. I think that Penn State's going to be able to get out to an early lead. Riley Leonard's going to be forced to throw the football. I also think that the number one or one of the top priorities for Penn State's defense coming into this game is to take Riley Leonard's legs away. Easier said than done. But if that's going to be this Penn State's defense's objective, is to take his legs away, he's going to be forced to throw the football maybe more than Mike Denbrock wants to throw the football. So I'll take the over, and I'll take it ever so slightly. Nick Singleton in this game, over or under 60 and a half rushing yards fits. He's been averaging 72 and a half rush yards a game.
I thought that number seemed pretty low to me, considering what they're going to want from him out of this game. So I think I like the over, but one thing that you said a second ago, Caroline, that really is stuck in my head with Riley, just ever so slightly. Let's remember, Vegas is always right, and they're always pretty close to what's right. So I should be uncomfortable with how big I think that number is for Riley Leonard. They know more than I do. 60 and a half feels really, really right to me, but I will take the over on the pure principle of they are going to run the football in this football in this game. They're going to commit to running. I don't think there's a situation where this game gets in a situation where they're not running over and over and over again. So bulk of carries makes me comfortable with the over on 60 and a half. But man, Brennan, that number feels really close. Like that's I'll say over, but I ain't putting a single dollar of my own cash on it.
Yeah, I'm a basically stay away. We're not cashing out or crashing out on this one. I think from a public standpoint, I mean, Nick Singleton's averaging 100 yards over the past few games. This line feels very low if you just look at it and say Nick Singleton over under 60 yards. A lot of people would hammer the over on that, but I think you calculate in Notre Dame's defense, how well they've been able to stop the run this season, the fact that Catron Allen's also playing really well, and where do those carries go? I think 60 is probably a really good number. If I had to pick it, I would take the over. I think he'll be closer to 70 yards in this game. But I don't think this is a game where Penn State just dominates running the football like they have against some other teams. I think Penn State, I think it's a high-scoring game, like I said, but I see more play action, Tyler Warren down the field, some big shots from Drew Aller. I don't know if I see a path where Nick Singleton goes for 100-plus yards and Penn State's pounding the ball the entire game, and that's the formula to beat Notre Dame. So overall, I'm going to stay away from the Nick Singleton at 60.5 rushing yards.
I like the over on this one, and I agree with Fitz. I think that Penn State's just going to want to continue to run the football, but also understanding Tyler Warren is going to get a whole lot of those looks as well, and Nick Singleton's also going to be splitting carries with Catron Allen. Now, even when they split carries, like, both of them still get theirs. Like against Boise State, Keetron Allen had a massive day, 134 yards on the ground, but Nicholas Singleton still had just shy of 90. So both of them are still going to get theirs. And if both of them get theirs, but that comes in the form of one gets 70, one might get 83, and then Tyler Warren has a big day through the air, then I know that still hits. And that still doesn't feel like an overly gaudy number for either of these running backs. So I'll take the over again, ever so slightly, because Notre Dame is going to make those yards really hard to come by. But I don't think I see a victory for Penn State if both Nick Singleton and Katron Allen are somewhere like in the 50s or low 60s in rushing yards. Okay, let's move over to the Cotton Bowl heading to Dallas. Will Howard over 247 and a half passing yards. Now, he's been averaging just shy of 250 so far this season, but also remember, Will Howard has been absolutely unstoppable through the air so far in the playoffs. So, Adam, what do you think?
Yeah, this is another tight one. I mean, this line feels really good, and I have, I just talked about how I think Texas will find some success with their secondary here. I'm going to go over, but not by much. I think it'll be close. Like you said, Caroline, averaging close to 250 right now. Line's at 247 and a half. I think he goes over. I don't think it comes from a bunch of bombs in this game. I think it comes from some yards after catch, some of those short screen passes, some of the slant routes, the RPO stuff that Ohio State loves to run. But I think Howard hits it, and but I don't think this ends up being like a 4 or 5 touchdown, 320 yard Will Howard game. It's a short chunks down the field, efficient offense, and Texas is able to stop for the most part the big plays for Ohio State.
Yeah, I can't have my prediction of 38 points and not have Will Howard hit the over on this side. I mean, this to me feels like Will Howard's going to hit that number. I'm pretty comfortable with it. So yeah, I love the over on this one.
I like the under. Because I think that Ohio State's going to be able to run the ball pretty effectively. Trevor Etienne ran for just shy of 100 in the SEC championship game. Cam Scadabue ran all over Texas in this game. Clemson found at least a little bit of success running the football. Not a ton, but a little bit in the first round of the college football playoff. So I think that Texas' secondary is one of the best in the country, rivaled probably only by Ohio State. So I think that's going to open up at least some running lanes for Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. That's going to take a load off a little bit from Will Howard. So I will take the under there. But Quinn Ewers, that's an interesting one. Quinn Ewers, frankly, that's any sort of prop bet in any Texas game, as far as Quinn Ewers is involved, I like to stay away from, because I never know which Quinn Ewers I'm going to get. But on the sports books right now, Quinn Ewers over under 1.5 passing touchdowns, over at plus 106.
What
under?
What, Caroline, which one are you taking? Over under on this one.
Under.
Since you said you stay away from Quinn Ewers, I want to put you on the spot and hear what you have to say.
I would take under Quinn Ewers 1.5 passing touchdowns. I just don't think it's going to be there for him.
Yeah, I'm taking the over, because you're going to be down and you're just going to be heaving the ball so much. You're going to get a couple of trash touchdowns in the blowout loss that puts you over. Like, he gets to 2 because of that. The easier bet on Quinn was the number, whatever the number is on interceptions. Take the over. He's going to throw one. He's going to throw one for sure.
What would you set it at? One and a half?
Well, I'd set it at 1.5 and force people to make a real decision on that. And I would still probably take the over. I think two picks feels kind of right out of this.
It's probably a 0.5 right now, I would imagine.
Over.
It's usually a 0.5. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's usually a 0.5.
If it's a 0.5, hammer it. I would hammer that right now. But yeah, I think Quinn Ewers goes under on this. Texas offensive line being banged up, not looking good against Arizona State, concerns me. I think Ohio State has a field day rushing the passer and is able to slow down the Texas offense. Also, Texas struggling to run the football like they did against Arizona State is going to come into play as well, which is going to hurt Quinn Ewers passing the football on the play action passes. They love the run down the field.
The juicy question here, though, is Arch Manning over under half a touchdown. I kind of like over. We didn't see Arch Manning against Arizona State, and frankly, I was kind of shocked. So I think this is a Steve Sarkisian, throw everything out into the field, let the playbook loose, let's throw every possible, funky little thing that we have in the playbook, and let's throw it out in the field here. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Arch Manning in a couple of, money downs here, whether it's third down, fourth down, red zone, whatever it might be. I like Arch Manning to score here.
Arch Manning, anytime touchdown, plus 340 right now. And then we got...
I like those odds.
First touchdown score, plus 2,200.
That's actually not a bad... Like, you could see them getting down to the goal line with the home crowd cheering them on early in the game. Goal line situation, Arch gets in. All of a sudden, he gets that. Like, I mean, that's worth the pizza money bet. Like, just put a little pizza money out on it. Who cares if you lose it?
Sprinkle a little bit on there. Why not? Go crazy.
Sprinkles aren't just cupcakes. They're also good bets.
They're also good bets as well. They'll also make you rich.
Well, next time we talk, friends, I'll either be in a very good mood or I'll be in a very bad mood.
Right. That's not because of the bets. Let's be honest about that.
I meant because of the Penn State game.
Right.
Yeah, Adam will be doing our next show live from the clubs at Miami, whether celebrating or washing away tears a little bit. But either way, enjoy Miami. Next time we're going to see you, you're going to be all bronze. You're going to have a tan, either a big smile on your face or not. And a daiquiri.
Caroline wants you to have a
daiquiri. I was just looking at the weather. It looks more like sweatshirt weather than anything else right now. It's not going to be the best weather in Miami, but...
I don't think you can go in to live with a sweatshirt on, brother. I think you have to actually wear something other than a sweatshirt.
I'm wearing a full suit
cut
and
offs.
Tie.
Okay. Yeah, there we go.
You can go the Bill Belichick look, just cut off hoodie.
Yeah, cut off
Make
sweatshirt.
It Miami. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everybody say a prayer for me. Let's hope that we're back on our Orange Bowl recap, and I'm in a good mood.
And that's when we'll see each other next Friday morning with a full Orange Bowl recap. So we will see you guys then. That's going to do it for us today. He's at Jason Fitz on Twitter. He's at Adam Brenneman 81. And I'm at Caroline Fenton 1. Appreciate y'all for stopping by the pod. So make sure to give it a like, a subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page as well. Give us a review. Tell your friends. Tell an enemy. Tell a Penn State fan, because they're all going to be either celebrating or not celebrating with Adam the next time that we catch up. So we'll be back on Friday morning after the Orange Bowl. We are out.